Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to our Foundation Bible Study here at First United Methodist Church, Murfreesboro. I'm Cliff Wright, the senior pastor. We believe that the study of Scripture is important for us as followers of Christ, and I hope that you find this week's study on the Gospel of Matthew meaningful and inspiring in your own personal life. Our Bible study meets each Wednesday at 6 p.m. in the sanctuary. And I also hope you'll consider joining us at one of our four weekly worship services at 8:30 and 11 a.m. on Sundays, both in the sanctuary and the Family Life Center. And as always, you can find us at our website, www.fumcm.org, or you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FUMC Borough. The purpose of our Bible study is to help us fulfill our mission of growing disciples of Jesus Christ who know Him, love Him, and serve Him. I hope this week's study helps you in your own personal journey towards knowing, loving, and serving Christ in your life. Thanks, Ben and Nancy. Appreciate y'all, as always. A couple of quick things here about what we've got left. In a couple of days, I and Andy Brown and Ted Millsap leave for Guatemala. And we'll be gone, I'll be gone 2 weeks. So I'll be out this Sunday, and I'll be out next Sunday, but we're still going to have church. And I'll be out next Wednesday, and I'll be out the following Wednesday. We're still going to meet on one of those Wednesdays. So we leave. By the way, more than likely, what we're going to be doing is working on that, you know, Guatemala hotel we talked to y'all about, that little five-room little deal that more than likely is what we're going to do, because you guys were so faithful and so generous, and we're going to be able to go down there and make a difference, and we'll bring back some pictures, and we're looking forward to it. Andy's told me yesterday that he's going to come by the house and pick me up at 2:30 in the morning to go. And I said, but God's not up yet at that time, you know. But that's what we got. That's what we got to do to be able to be there and be ready to go. So we are looking forward to that. Here's what that means. Next Wednesday, we're not going to meet. We will not meet Bible study next Wednesday. We're going to take off one Wednesday. I'll be gone two Wednesdays. Trey is going to lead you a week from next Wednesday. In 2 weeks, Trey's going to lead you. And I've gotten up to a great passage of Scripture, and Trey's going to be able to lead you in that. It's chapters 25 through 31, and I want you to read that. And it's just about some great stuff. Tabernacle, mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant. In other words, Trey is going to be Harrison Ford, you know. He's got Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's got Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it's gonna be great. So I want you to be here for that. Then I'll be back, and on the following week, we've got the Golden Calf, and so that's what a great passage with great lessons for us. So I hope that you'll make sure and be here then as well. The week after that is Ash Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, but I believe that's correct. The week after that's Ash Wednesday. And then we'll come back, and we'll have two Wednesdays prior to spring break, and we'll finish up in those two Wednesdays. So I hope that you'll make your plans, that you'll be here. We got some really, really, really good stuff that's coming ahead of us. We have some good stuff tonight. This is some good stuff tonight. If you'll open your Bibles to chapter 20, we. Before that blizzard last Wednesday, and we had to miss, we we finished the Ten Commandments. And right after the Ten Commandments, this is an interesting passage. We're going to look at a passage in chapter 20. We're going to very quickly go through a little bit more of the covenant. And then we're going to close talking about the presence of the angel with these folks and the power of that. So that's our plan for tonight. Look at verse 18, chapter 20, verse 18, or starting with verse 18. Now, when all the people perceived the thunderings and the lightnings and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, the people were afraid and they trembled. You know, one of the things I love about the Old Testament, there's just so much honesty in the Old Testament. Have you ever been afraid, trembled? You ever been afraid, maybe even in the presence of God, you were afraid? People were afraid, and they trembled, and they stood afar off. And they said to Moses, "You speak to us, and we will hear. But let not God speak to us, lest we die." Let's skip down to verse 21. And the people stood afar off. It's the second time we've heard that. While Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. So you got this vision of people afraid, standing at a distance from God. Let's hold that thought just a moment. But they said to Moses, "You speak to us and we will hear." It's an interesting thing about that. And we will, you speak, God being the voice of God, the spokesperson of God. So it's like they were afraid to get close to God. But Moses, you get close to God. God, let God speak to you. Then you speak to us and we'll hear. We will hear. In the Hebrew language, there are not separate words for hearing and obeying. So they would oftentimes use the same word. There's not separate words that connotate the message of hearing and the message of obeying. So for the Israelites, it was as if hearing was equated with obeying, because if you didn't obey, you really didn't hear. Does that make sense? If you didn't obey, you really hadn't really heard. Now for us today, that's a little bit different. You know, you can hear something, you can hear it, you can comprehend it, you can take it in, but you don't necessarily have to obey. Maybe you grew up with parents like my parents. I remember hearing this a lot when I was a kid. I would hear one of my parents, usually my mom, say, let me back up and see if I can get it the way she said it. "Did you hear what I said?" Did your parents ever say that to you? "Did you hear what I said?" So this would come after they had said for me to go do something or not do something. And when I either didn't do it, if they said do it, you see, or did do it when they said not do it, then I would hear that question, "Did you hear what I said?" There were many times that I wanted to say, "Yes, I heard what you said. I'm just not going to do it." The fact that I'm standing in front of you tonight is proof that I did not say those words. We can hear and not do, but for the Israelites, there was the understanding that if you really heard, you obeyed. So when we got this thing here about you speak and we'll hear, it's you speak, we'll hear, and we will obey. Hearing God, we talked about that a little bit Sunday, didn't we? Hearing God, trying to listen to God, trying to listen to what God is saying to us. And it's reason, guys, that for me, and you've heard me say it so many times, that I believe this time here is so important in the life of a church, any church, wherever that is. It's important for followers of Christ to have times where we hear. And there are a lot of different ways to hear. we can hear in our own private time where God speaks to us directly. It's hard to look. You know what? If that's ever happened to you, and I bet it has, you almost didn't want to tell anybody about it because it was so private and so special. It was a time where, deep in your soul, you knew that God was speaking to you, saying to you to do something, to move in a certain way. God speaks to us like that. God speaks to us through other people. I think that's why it's important to have those opportunities where you've got those special people around you. You don't have to have very many. You've got those special people around you that help you hear. They just help you hear. They're sounding boards for you. And I think it's why time like this is so important, that we dig and poke around, because what we're trying to do, and you've heard me, I've used this expression a lot, we're trying to learning the message so that we can live the message. So that's learning so that we can live, hearing and obeying. If you just learn it and it's knowledge and you don't do anything with it, so there's no obedience there. It's trust and obey. It's learning the message so that we can live the message. I find it impossible in my life. I'm going to speak personally. I find it impossible in my life to live the message if I'm not constantly learning the message. But you can learn the message and just get head knowledge. When I spoke a year and a half ago and met the Staff Parish Relations Committee of this church for the first time, and there are members in here, folks in here that were part of that committee, and that I think they'll remember this, I talked about that, how important that was. And for me, it was a head, heart, hands thing. That my Bible studies would be a little bit more head, but they would still involve the heart, because I'm Wesleyan. And Wesley was a big heart guy. You know, you got to move people's hearts. So my Bible studies would be a little bit more head, but still involve the heart. The sermons would be a little bit more heart, but they would still involve the head. You don't want to take that out of them. So it's head and heart, but you're always wanting it to move to the hands. Head, heart. It moves you emotionally to where you want to do something with your hands. Know Him. Love Him. Know Him. Love Him. Serve Him. It's a way of hearing the message so that you can live the message. So they said to Moses, "You speak to us. You speak, and we will hear." But they stood at a distance from God. You know, you go back and you read back. If you were to go back and read back through what we've been talking about in Exodus, isn't it interesting that, you know, that they loved it when God delivered them, right? Who doesn't love that? Who doesn't love it when God gets you out of a mess? They loved it when God was there to deliver them, to get them across the Red Sea, to deliver them from the plagues, to get them across the Red Sea, to get to bring manna to them when they were hungry, water to them when the waters were bitter. You remember all those stories that we talked about over and over. They were ready. They were ready to praise God, but it was like keeping God at a distance, to praise God at a distance. I think that's a real temptation for us. You know, to praise God, to give thanks to God at a distance. But when we start letting God in close, then God starts to, you know, get personal with us. That's when God challenges us. That's when God moves us to do things differently. So they're wanting to stay at a distance from God. And then notice what Moses did. That's verse 21. And the people stood afar off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. Man, that one right there is worth underlying in your Bible right there. Moses drew near to the thick darkness. And then notice how the verse ends. The thick darkness where God was. God was in the thick darkness. John's gospel begins that way, doesn't it? You know, in the beginning was the Word, was with God. Remember, Jesus was born into that world that was filled with darkness. And John reminds us, and the darkness is not overcome it. Jesus came into that world of darkness. He got into the world of darkness. He didn't stand back afar off from the darkness. He comes into our darkness and he gets involved in our darkness. And so Moses went to be where God was, and God was right in the thickness of the darkness. Darkness comes in a lot of ways, doesn't it? A lot of you guys have experienced darkness. Some of you have experienced darkness in more than one way, and you know what I'm talking about. Darkness comes in a lot of different ways for us. A lot of different ways. Here's good news, and it goes all the way back to the Old Testament. Our God is a God who is with us in the darkness of life. The psalmist said it in that favorite psalm, the 23rd. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow, darkness, the shadow of death, darkness. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Notice, the psalmist didn't say, I won't be confronted with it. He didn't say, I won't ever meet darkness, evil. He didn't say that. He said, I won't fear it. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because God's there. Thou art with me. Where was he? In the valley of the shadow of death. In the darkness. Thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff. They comfort me. And the people stood afar off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. Gosh, that is so powerful to me. That God was in the darkness. If you are experiencing darkness, God is there. God is there with you. I want to mention this, and I don't want to belabor it. I really don't want to belabor it at all, because it's not, but it's just, there's something that's important to me. But this passage, when I was reading this, it's what came to me. It's because of the symbolism of it. I mentioned the white robe, didn't I, Sunday? Here's the significance of that for me. Now, as a minister, you don't have to wear a white robe, you know, to believe this. I mean, ministers believe this. I actually have a black robe. Some of you have actually seen it. I've worn a white robe since 1985. I got out of divinity school in 1983. My family gave me a black robe. And I wore that robe for 2 years until Amy and I moved to South Louisiana. And we were in a church down there, and I was the associate pastor. The senior pastor was a guy named William Peoples. Never forget him. Great, great, great guy. And he wore a white robe. William wore a white robe. I asked him one day about the white robe. Why did he wear a white robe? And he said this. He said, it's because every Sunday is a little Easter. And I had learned that too. I'd learned that in divinity school and worship class. Every Sunday is a little, we have Easter, but every Sunday is a little Easter. Because we celebrate the same thing. We always are reminded that Jesus, the tomb couldn't hold him. Not even death could defeat him. That he rose from the grave. And he said, it's just a reminder of that for me. So I thought, man, I really like that. But I had a black robe. He had a white robe. And so every Sunday we would come out. William had on his white robe. I had on my black robe. And the congregation started calling us salt and pepper. And one Sunday, they presented me in the worship service. They presented me with a surprise gift. They gave me a white robe. And I've worn that white robe ever since, 1985. It's just, you know, it's just special. And when I go into the closet, now I have a different one. It's not the same one from 1985. But when I go in the closet every Sunday morning and I put my robe on before coming in here, it's just a reminder. Now, you know, I need some reminders. And sometimes things get hectic. You know how it can be. And it gets that way for us preachers. And even on Sunday morning, there's last minute something comes up. I put on that white robe. Just now for me, it's just a reminder. It's a reminder that God is in the thick darkness. God's in the thick darkness. And he's overcome the thick darkness. Because every Sunday is a little Easter. This is just such a great passage. Following this passage then, as we keep moving forward then, in the next few chapters, 21, 22, 23, we've got the continuation of the covenant law with folks, and we're not going to go all the way through that tonight. Maybe you read some of that. I'm going to read a couple of them because it's just kind of interesting. If you'll skip over to chapter 21, verse 17. This is kind of a little interesting section. 21, verse 17. Whoever curses his father or his mother shall be put to death. Holy moly. I read a book several years ago, and the author asked this question. The question was, do you believe everything that's in the Bible? That was his question. And man, I have wrestled with that question ever since I read it. I think that was years ago. I bet it's been 25, 30 years ago that I read that. Do you believe everything that's in the Bible? Do you believe everything's in the Bible? And when I ask people that, I've asked people, Sunday school classes that I've taught through the years, do you believe everything is in the Bible? The answer is always yes. Everybody says, they always say yes. And so then we get into this thing about, well, what does the word believe mean? So then we start talking about what believe means. And literally, the word believe means live by. You go back to that, if you hear it and don't obey it, you haven't really heard it. Okay, so if you're not living it, you don't really believe it, because the word believe means to live by. So then I would ask the question, well, so do you live by? And then I'll go to the Bible and I'll pick out something like Exodus 21, verse 17, whoever curses his father or mother shall be put to death. And so I said, do we live by that? Well, you know what? We don't, do we? Nor should we, right? So what's up? I mean, what's the deal here? When men quarrel, verse 18, and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, and the man does not die but keeps his bed, then if the man rises again and walks abroad with his staff, he that struck him shall be clear. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall have him thoroughly healed. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? That's kind of a... What's being said there? What are they trying to accomplish with that law? What are they trying to accomplish? Here's a guy that's hurt somebody else. He says, well, you know what? You kind of help him get healed and you pay for his being out of work. What is that? What do we call it when we were little? Well, when we were little, I called it being fair. Did you ever say, well, that's not fair? Well, it's not fair. I mean, you know, there's something in you that kind of recognizes whether something's fair or not. Well, that's not fair. Heck, that's not fair. It's not fair that happened. But then they were. Look at verse 23. If any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. What were they trying to accomplish? What's the purpose of this stuff? Well, there were, the covenant that, remember we said the Ten Commandments divided into two? All the Ten Commandments divided into two. Remember the lawyer that came to Jesus, what have I got to do? What is it? Love God, love neighbor. Be in unity with God, be in unity with each other. One of the ways that we're in unity with God is by being in unity with each other. One of the ways we love God is by loving each other. When we love each other, we're really loving God, because there's the image of God in us. The image of God is in us. You go back to Genesis and you read the creation story, you remember what it says? And God breathed into what? Breathed into their nostrils what? The breath of life. Isn't that interesting that in you, looking at the creation story from Genesis, in you and in me, is what? The breath of God. And everybody out there is the breath of God. So what these folks were doing is, how is it that we're able to live in community with each other? How do we love God and love each other? And how do we do that? Well, there's this sense of justice and fairness. Before this covenant, before this law, if I took one of your oxen, you could come and take my whole herd. Well, that's not fair. If I took one of your oxen, you might come and take one of my oxen, and while you're at it, kill one of my children, you see, to get back at. If I took one of your eyes, you could come back and take both of my eyes and maybe kill my whole family. So what they're doing is they're saying, no, it doesn't work that way. To live into community together, we got to learn how to be with each other and treat each other fairly. So there was the law of what? An eye for an eye. That's fair. An eye for an eye. A tooth for a tooth. Okay? Jesus came along and pushed that further. What did Jesus say? You remember what Jesus said? We learned this in our study on Matthew. What did Jesus say? Please tell me. Somebody tell me that you remember what we said in Matthew's day. Jesus said, what you've heard it said. What? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Why did he say you have heard it said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? Right here. You've heard it said. There it is. There it is. You've heard it. You have heard it said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, because that was in the covenant law. You've heard it said. But Jesus said what? But I say to you. And then Jesus went beyond that. This guy, remember the guy that I told you about was asking the question, you believe everything in the Bible? He used that as, that was one of his examples. So he said, he went further with the question. He said, did Jesus believe everything in the Bible? Oh my gosh, that just make your head explode, won't it? Did Jesus believe anything in the Bible? His answer was no. He said that Jesus didn't, if it meant live by, and this was the example, Jesus did not live by an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Jesus, so we see everything in the Bible through the eyes of Jesus. So when somebody comes to you and they say, well, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and getting back at people, that's in the Bible. They're exactly right. Do we live by that? Should we live by that? No, because Jesus said, no. No, we take that further. Jesus still believed in the law, but we take that further. This law, listen, it was wonderful compared to what they had, because they didn't have anything. So it pushed them way down the road in their living as community. Guys, it's why it's so important. The church is an example of what it means to live in community. We're an example of that. Living in the Spirit of Christ, we're an example to the world of what it means to live in the community, to treat each other fairly, to love each other, to be caring for each other, but not just each other, but for those that are outside the church. So you've got this sense of fairness and justice. How do you do that? Because sometimes it gets real hard, doesn't it? Have you ever found that it gets hard? Are there some people you have trouble, you know, treating fairly? People, you know, are there times you have trouble with that? So how do you do that? Well, skip over. This is a great passage. I love this one. Skip over to chapter 23. And skip down to verse 20. Chapter 23, verse 20. So how are we going to do this? How are we going to live by these rules, this law that is there? Ours is, it's different now because Jesus has pushed us further. So how do we do that? Verse 20. Behold, I send an angel before you. Behold, I send an angel before you. We don't talk a lot about angels, do we? Behold, I send an angel before you. I don't know what angels are. Do you know what angels are? I don't know what angels are. Clarence, I remember Clarence. You know, what a wonderful life. I like Clarence, actually. I think Clarence was a great angel, by the way. But I don't know what. What we know theologically and biblically is that angels were messengers from God. That's about kind of all we know. They were messengers from God. This is the, behold, I send an angel before you. Now look at this part. To guard you on the way and to bring you to the place which I've prepared. Skip down to verse 23. When my angel goes before you, so this angel, whatever that is, it's with us. It's presence of, another way of talking about the presence of God, a messenger of God, presence of God, going with us, going before us. When my angel goes before you and brings you into the Amorites, the Hittites, Perizzites, and the Canaanites, and Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I blot them out. You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and break their pillars in pieces. You shall serve the Lord your God. What was the purpose of the angel? The angel went before them to do what? You shall serve the Lord your God. What was the purpose of the angel that was going before them? To lead them and to guide them to do what? To protect them from what? We understand this, whatever this, the angels are, this presence of God, doesn't protect us in the sense that it keeps all evil from happening to us, right? We understand that, right? But you've had evil happen to you, haven't you, in some way? You've experienced darkness, right? You've experienced disappointment. You've experienced, some of you, death of people you love most in life. You've experienced that, right? Some of you have experienced the darkness of cancer. You've experienced that, right? Some of you. So we're not protected from that, right? Are we in agreement with that? Hey, look, it sounds great if we could, you know, you can say it. I wish I could. I wish I could say what this means is that if we believe hard enough, we'll just be protected from all that. But that's not life, is it? That's not the way life works. What's the protection? Protecting us, guarding us, leading us to what? What's he saying here? Isn't he saying here that God's presence, this angel, is to lead us and guard us and to protect us so that we remain faithful even in the presence of evil? Isn't that what he's saying? That nothing is going to become between us and God, and we will always allow God and only God to be our God and to guide us and to deliver us and to protect us. Are you with me? But it's not a guarding from all the bad things that can happen in life. It's a guarding from keeping us from leaving God. It's a guarding that keeps us from being beholden to anything or anyone other than whom? Other than God. That God is going to be our God. That's what I get from this passage. And that there are times in life where you want to give up. There are times in life where you want to turn away. There are times in life when you want to just, oh, gee whiz, what in the world? What in the world? And we're reminded that God is with us to guide us and protect us and keep us strong in the faith. You guys, you're do y'all like To Kill a Mockingbird as much as I do? You like that? You remember Miss DeBose? And To Kill a Mockingbird, do you remember Miss DeBose? Let me give you a little background on you. If you remember To Kill a Mockingbird, Jim and Scout, Gene Louise, they were trying to figure out what their daddy, Atticus, was good at. They were talking one day, it's like, what's Dad good at? I mean, Dad's not good at anything. You know, Atticus, he can't do anything. Atticus can't do anything. And so they ask Calpurnia one day, you know, and she said, well, he was good at lots of stuff. And they said, well, like what? And Calpurnia scratched her head and said, well, I don't rightly know. Jim underlined it. When he asked Atticus, that was, of course, his dad, if he was going out for the Methodists, I love this part of the book. If he was going to go out for the Methodists, and Atticus said he'd break his neck if he did, he was too old for that sort of thing. The Methodists were trying to pay off their church mortgage. Isn't that great? When was this book written? The Methodists have always been trying to pay off church mortgages. The Methodists were trying to pay off their church mortgage, and they had challenged the Baptists to a game of touch football. Everybody in town's father was playing, it seemed, except Atticus. Jim said he didn't even want to go. But he was unable to resist football in any form, and so he stood gloomily on the sidelines with Atticus and me watching Cecil, Jacob's father, make touchdowns for the Baptists. And so they were just frustrated. Their daddy couldn't do anything. He couldn't do anything. What was Atticus good at? If you remember right after that, in the book, there was a dog that came down the street. Remember, it had rabies. This dog was coming down the street, and it was going all over everywhere. And they saw that. You know, what are they going to do? And, you know, so they started going, this dog, what's going on with this dog? And they came out there, and Atticus came, and there was this, sheriff came. What was his name? Heck Tate. You know, and he came, and what are they going to do about that dog? So the dog's coming, and the sheriff starts to, you know, shoot. And the problem is, it's right there in town. And finally, he turns to Atticus, and he hands the gun over to Atticus. And Atticus takes the shot. Of course, Jim's about to go crazy. It's kind of like, what's he doing giving that gun to my daddy? I mean, my daddy can't do anything. He can't even play football for the Methodists. He sure ain't going to be able to shoot that dog. And you remember Atticus, he takes one shot, and he shoots him. And they went over, and they looked at that dog, and the sheriff, you know, leaned down, and the bullet wasn't here. It was over to the left just a little bit. And he turned, and he looked back at Atticus, and he said, it's over to the left just a little. We shot him. And Atticus said, yeah, I always shoot just a little bit to the left. I thought that was great. Shoot just a little bit to the left. So, they're talking, and Jim was sitting there, and Jim was like, he didn't know what to say. The scout didn't know what to say. They'd never seen their daddy do anything like that. And Miss Maudie, she saw him, and she grinned. She said, well now, Miss Jean Louise, you still think your father can't do anything? You still ashamed of him? No, I said meekly. Forgot to tell you the other day that besides playing the Jew's harp, Atticus Finch was the deadest shot in Macomb County in his time. Dead shot, echoed Jim. That's what I said, Jim Finch. Guess you'll change your tune now, too. Very idea. Did you know his nickname was Old One Shot when he was a boy? Old One Shot. Why, down at the landing when he was coming up, if he shot 15 times and hit 14 doves, he'd complain about wasting ammunition. Jim muttered. He never said anything about that. Never said anything about it, did he? No, ma'am. Wonder why he never goes hunting now, I said. Well, maybe I can tell you, said Miss Maudie. If your father's anything, he's civilized in his heart. Marksmanship's a gift of God, a talent. Oh, you got to practice to make it perfect, but shooting's different from playing the piano or the like. I think maybe he put his gun down when he realized that God had given him an unfair advantage over most living things. I guess he decided he wouldn't shoot till he had to. And he had to today. He had to do that today. So say what you, oh man, Jim, it's like, man, my dad. Well, my dad, he can shoot that gun. He can shoot that gun. And he was so proud of him because he could shoot that gun. Well, you remember there was this lady in town. Her name was Miss DeBose. You remember the deal about, of course, Atticus and defending the black man, Tom. And Miss DeBose didn't like that. Remember? And boy, I'm telling you, she raised all kinds of cane about that, about Atticus Finch. She called him names, bad names. And she said it to the kids, to Jim and to Scout, Jean Louise. She said that. And she called their daddy that name. She called him that. And she made fun of them. And Jim got so mad at that one day that he knocked off all the tops of the camellia bushes at her house. Do you remember that? Knocked them all off. She was so upset, and Atticus found out about it, and here was the agreement they made. Jim had to go read to Miss DeBose for a month. Do you remember that? Had to go in and read to her for a month because Miss DeBose was sickly. She had cancer. She was dying. Now, Jim didn't know that. And so Atticus, that was the deal. He had to go and read to her for a month. Now, I want to read to you at the very end then what happened then. Phone rang, and Atticus answered it. He went to the hat rack in the hall. He said, I'm going to go down to Miss DeBose's for a while. Now, this is, the month is over. Jim's done what he's supposed to do, reading to Miss DeBose. And they get this phone call, and Atticus says, I'm going to go down to Miss DeBose's for a while. He said, I won't be long. But Atticus stayed away until long past my bedtime. When he returned, he was carrying a candy box. Atticus sat down in the living room, put the box on the floor beside his chair. What's she want? Asked Jim. We had not seen Miss DeBose for over a month. She was never on the porch anymore when we passed. Atticus said, she's dead, son. She died just a few minutes ago. Oh, said Jim, well. Well is right, said Atticus. She's not suffering anymore. She was sick for a long time. Son, didn't you know what her fits were? Because when he would go and read to her, she had these fits. He said, did you know what her fits were? And Jim shook his head. Miss DeBose was a morphine addict. She took it as a painkiller for years. The doctor put her on it. She'd have spent the rest of her life on it and died without so much agony. But she was too contrary. Sir, said Jim. Atticus said, just before your escapade, talking about when he knocked off all the tops of her camellia bushes, she called me to make her will. Dr. Reynolds told her that she had only a few months left to live. Her business affairs were in perfect order. But she said, there's still one thing out of order, one thing in my life out of order. What was that? Jim asked, perplexed. She said she was going to leave this world beholden to nothing and nobody. She's going to leave this world beholden to nothing and nobody. Jim, when you're sick as she was, it's all right to take anything to make it easier. But it wasn't all right for her. She said she meant to break herself of it before she died, and that's what she did. Jim said, you mean that's what her fits were? Yep, that's what they were. Most of the time you were reading to her, I doubt if she heard a word you said. Her whole mind and body were concentrated on that alarm clock. If you hadn't fallen into her hands, I'd have made you go read to her anyway. It may have been some distraction, but there was another reason. Did she die free? Asked Jim. As free as the mountain air, said Atticus. She was conscious to the last, almost. Conscious, he smiled, and cantankerous. She still disapproved heartily of my doings, and she said I'd probably spend the rest of my life bailing you out of jail. She had Jesse fix you this box. Atticus reached down and picked up the candy box. He handed it to Jim. Jim opened the box. Inside, surrounded by wads of damp cotton, was a white, waxy, perfect camellia. It was a snow on the mountain. Jim's eyes nearly popped out of his head. Oh, hell devil, he said. That old hell devil, he screamed, flinging it down. Why can't she leave me alone? In a flash, Atticus was up and standing over, and Jim buried his face in Atticus' shirt front. I think that was her way of telling you, Jim, that everything's all right now. Everything's all right. You know, she was a great lady. A lady? Jim raised his head. His face was scarlet. After all those bad things that she said about you, a lady? Yes, she was. She had her own views about things, a lot different from mine, maybe. But son, I told you that if you hadn't lost your head, I'd have made you go read to her. Here's why. I wanted you to see something about her. I wanted you to see what real courage is. Instead of getting the idea that courage is a man with a gun in his hand, it's when you know that you're licked before you begin, but you begin anyway, and you see it through no matter what. Oh, man, did you hear that? It's when you know that you're licked before you begin, but you begin anyway. A year and a half ago, 2 weeks after I came to this church, I knew I was licked. I knew I was licked. You don't come into a church and have to tell people that you've got to give like you've never given before, or we're not going to get out of the mess we're in and not get licked. And not get licked. It's the way it is. It's when you know you're licked, but you begin anyway, and you see it through. You rarely win. But sometimes you do. Miss DeBose won all 98 pounds of her. According to her views, she died beholden to nothing and nobody. She was the bravest person I ever knew. You know what that says to me? It's this right here. It's this right here. The angel came to guide them so that they would be beholden to nothing and nobody, that nobody would come between them and God and following God and doing what it was that God wanted them to do. Look, guys, sometimes you got to do that. You just got to do that. There are some times in life when you just got to do that. You got to do that, and you got to make up your mind that nothing is going to come, that you're not going to be beholden to anything. It took me a long time to learn that. Gosh, it took me a long time. My whole adult life. I got to say that my good friend, Dr. Andy Brown, told me shortly after I got here, I said something about getting older. And you know what he told me? Andy, I'm going to try to quote you as close to your words as I can. He said, getting old is not all bad. Do you remember saying that? It's not all bad. Because sometimes when you get older, you know, you can stand for what you believe. When I was 38 years old, pastoring a 4,000 member church, let me tell you, I walked around scared all the time. I mean, I did. I walked around scared all the time. Because the deal is, by golly, you better keep people happy. You know? That's what I thought. Anyway. You go around the block a few times, and you come to a place in life where you realize you can't live your life beholden to everybody else. Is this making any sense? It's what the angel was there for, to say. There's one thing that you and I have in life. You know what it is? It's character. It's integrity. It's our name. It's standing for what we believe. And I believe that's what they were saying here. The angel of the Lord helps us do that, to guide us and to protect us. May God's angel always, always go with you. Let's come and pray.